Craig Cox, and I'm a Senior Vice President for Agriculture and Natural Resources at the Environmental Working Group.
Let's start off by talking about this report that just came out today. Just go ahead and tell me a little bit about it.
What the report is about is this growing epidemic of toxic algal blooms across the United States. The bloom that got the most news, of course, was the continuing trouble in Lake Erie that is now suffering from toxic algal bloom every year. So in 2014, the Toledo's drinking water supply was shut down for 3 days because the drinking water was contaminated with toxins from the algal bloom in Lake Erie. And that really set off the first real serious attention being paid to the threat, both to drinking water and for people just using lakes to recreate if they're infected with one of these blooms.
The report highlights how it's been a growing problem. You know, it started out with just, I think it said 3 in 2010, and then over 100 this past year. Why is this a growing problem?
So two things. One is you have to take those numbers with a little grain of salt, because there is no official systematic tracking of blooms. You know, we wish there was, but there isn't. So what we resorted to was just searching for news stories. So those are, you know, those counts are, those are the number of news stories we were able to find reporting on the incidence of an algal bloom. So, it's not an official count, but it's the best we could do. So what, I think there's a couple things going on. One is we know over, you know, the last decade or more that the primary source of the phosphorus, the fertilizer that actually fertilizes and triggers these algal blooms, is primarily fertilizer and manure running off of farming operations. It's not the only source of phosphorus. You know, sewage treatment plants, for example, there will be phosphorus in the wastewater that they emit after they treat sewage, but those facilities are regulated and they have a permit that limits how much phosphorus they can emit. But that's not the case in agriculture. There's really no standards, or let alone regulations, about how much phosphorus can run off of farming operations. So that's number one. Number two, agriculture has intensified dramatically in the last decade or so, and especially with concentrated animal feeding operations, you know, the big hog farms or cattle farms or dairy farms. So there's more agriculture happening, and it's happening in a much more intensive way than it was in the past. And then we're also seem to be getting more and more dangerous rainstorms, especially in the spring, when the fields are way more vulnerable to losing fertilizer and manure in the springtime before the crop is grown. So I think those three things are sort of combined to increase this problem with algal blooms.
There is a push to focus more on reducing runoff and kind of improving water quality. Do you think, do you see that in agriculture, or do you think that more needs to be done or voluntary programs helping? Talk a little bit about the effort as you see it.
So there's a lot more talk about the need for farmers to up their game in terms of pollution prevention practices, which is really encouraging. But we have a long, 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 long way to go still. For example, cover crops are often, you know, really at the top of the list of practices that are recommended. And a year or so ago, we used satellite imagery to track cover crops and found in Iowa, for example, only 2% of the fields had cover crops. Illinois, a little more than 2%. So, although I think So there's a lot more talk about the need for farmers to up their game in terms of pollution prevention practices, which is really encouraging. The attention is great. The amount of protection that's needed on the landscape is still, we're just still barely getting there.
Okay. And then you mentioned Lake Erie has an annual bloom. Tell me a little bit about what that means.
So these blooms started in Lake Erie maybe 10 years ago. They form, excuse me, the major source of the phosphorus that triggers the blooms is coming from the Maumee River that drains into the western end of Lake Erie. And the primary source of the phosphorus in the Maumee is agriculture, both row crops and livestock operations. And there's usually, as I said, there's some significant rainfall in the spring that you can see this big chocolate stain in Lake Erie. That's the runoff from the Maumee River, and that delivers a lot of phosphorus. As the lake starts to warm, the algae start to grow and expand, and the blooms can cover almost the entire western side of the lake. And it's amazing, these blooms are so regular. There's actually an official government forecast system that forecasts the size and toxicity of the bloom every year.
Is this something that will be updated, or talk a little bit about the logistics of the actual report itself?
Well, this is our first piece we've done on these toxic algal blooms, and it's designed to sort of introduce the topic to people, to give them a basic understanding of how these blooms work, what their health effects are, why they form, and to point out that it's not just Lake Erie. These blooms are occurring, you know, all across the United States. Later this year, we're going to do a more intensive look at data that we're just trying to assemble, where there's actually been some testing of lakes in Ohio and across the United States for the presence of algal toxins. But we'll be continuing to try to dig into this issue as best we can. There's some real limitations on what we can know at the moment, and this may be a little too far down in the weeds, but under the Safe Drinking Water Act, if a contaminant is not a so-called regulated contaminant, in other words, there's actually a legal limit set for how much of that contaminant is allowed in drinking water, then utilities don't have to test for that contaminant. And there is no legal limit for these algal toxins so far. So there's really very little testing that's going on across the country. So we know far less about the presence of these toxins in water and in drinking water than we do about a lot of other potential contaminants. So we are kind of limited in what we can find out.